And we are in 1 Samuel. First Samuel 28. All right, for a full week and then some more on at the end of the week before, we've been dealing with this familiar spirit thing, and so we're going to break out of that soon enough here. Verse 7, let's start there. And then said Saul unto his servants, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit. Once again, three times here in this next two or three verses, she has or hath a familiar spirit. And so these familiar spirits apparently connect themselves to somebody, and I suppose it's because they're familiar. their exact relation to evil spirits and stuff, as far as I know, the Bible doesn't reveal, or at least I haven't found it. I'm assuming it's pretty much the same thing, but it goes on to say that I may go to her and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, behold, there is a woman that hath a familiar spirit at Endor. And Saul disguised himself and put on other raiment, and he went, and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night, and he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit. And so that's what you see with tarot cards and all that kind of stuff. Some of it's spookier than other things, and whether you know you get anything from a Ouija board or not, who knows? It's just not good to open yourself up to that stuff, plainly. And there's lots of stuff related to it that it's not good to open yourself up to because there are spirits connected with it. But verse 8, bring me him up whom I shall name unto thee. And the woman said unto him, behold, thou knowest that what Saul hath done, how he hath cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards. So there's a connection with wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare for my life to cause me to die? And Saul sware to her by the Lord. Strange that he would continue to do that. He does it several times. You know, by the Lord he swore to her. So it's just weird that he would be in the condition he's in and still be doing that. Lord sware to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, bring me up Samuel. Now there's something that pops up there you kind of read over, and I know that y'all are familiar enough with it. But over and over again, when hell is mentioned or the pit is mentioned or any of those things, what you come to the definitive conclusion of is heaven is up and hell is down. It just is that way. And so again and again, you see it even in this passage, twice there in the verse, who am I going to bring up for you? So even she, I don't know what kind of theology she's got, but she even understands that whatever this is she's contacting is dwelling beneath her feet. So she's bringing these up. That indicates there is something under your feet, right? Verse 12, and when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice, and the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me, for thou art Saul? Now, I'm not sure if Samuel told her or exactly what happened there, but one thing you should see by her alarm is that this is something unusual. So you can't use this passage to justify fiddling around and trying to bring up somebody from, you know, from the dead to talk to you. This is something that is unusual. She has a familiar spirit normally. Now she's contacting something real, right? And when she does, there's an alarm to it. And so this is something unusual for her. So don't pretend to be able to justify yourself for fiddling around with contacting the dead that, well, somebody in the Bible did, okay? Because this is something alarming to her. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, why hast thou deceived me? For thou art Saul. How she figured that out, I'm not sure. Don't know if Samuel said something or what. But In any case, and the king said unto her, Be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said, said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. Okay, so first of all, I saw gods. Well, she saw Samuel. So it must be that, you know, what she deals with are, when she sees things coming up, it must look like men, and men must look something like gods. But she said, I saw God. So go all the way back to Genesis 3, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil, right? Those connections. But over and over, as you well know, there be gods many and lords many. There are gods in this world. There are gods in this earth. Sometimes those gods are simply idols inhabited by familiar spirits, evil spirits, right? But the Bible acknowledges other small g gods. However, only our God made the heavens and the earth. And He is the God of gods. In fact, He's the God of the spirits of all flesh. So it's no, you know, it's no surprise that she would identify a man figure coming up as a god. I mean, most people's gods look somewhat like men anyway, right? Even the Pharaoh's gods had certain man parts, even if their head looked like something else. So I'm just saying, I saw gods. And once again, you find that word ascending out of the earth. So once again, you have to acknowledge that what the Bible teaches, and this is not just a solitary incident here, but Bible teaches in a broad way that underneath your feet are things going on. And let me just take you to Exodus real quick and show you a couple things on this ascending out of the earth. In Exodus 20, verse 4, you read, Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, so beneath your feet, or that is in the water, and notice under the earth. So, first acknowledgement is, when you go underseas, you're going under the earth. So, you're going down, but it acknowledges that. So, don't make gods out of something that you see down there when you finally get down there. Look in Philippians chapter 1 and this phrasing of things under the earth. Philippians chapter 1. I'm sorry, Philippians chapter 2. It's chapter 2. And Philippians chapter 2, verse 9, talking about Christ. Wherefore God hath also highly exalted him, given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth. Well, under the earth, according to Exodus 20, means beneath the seas or in the sea, okay? Beneath ground level, that kind of thing. All right, whether it means something else, well, it does, because whether you know it or not, there's some things that dwell beneath your feet, right? In the Word of God, you've got hell beneath your feet. At that day, Abraham's bosom was beneath their feet. That's why Samuel came up and ascended, because he was down beneath your feet. Look, if you will, in Revelation 5, there's just a lot of these we could go to. I don't think I have to prove a lot to you guys, but Revelation 5, it's just interesting to think, you know, everybody's looking to outer space, and I know that outer space is an issue, and that, you know, when the Lord made the heavens and the earth, He didn't say those were good, the heavens part. And so, because the devil's out there, right? Devil's also in the deep, which is water. Right? And so there's this connection where man is constantly looking out, and yet they'll tell you that when you go down into the oceans, that is the least explored territory We've explored space more than we've explored the oceans in many regards. And so as you go deeper and deeper, and that's only a few miles deep at its deepest, you get down a lot further, of course, the earth is thick. The earth has, first of all, a crust, and then it has a mantle, and part of that mantle is liquefied magma. Then you have an outer core and an inner core. The outer core is supposed to be all liquid magma, okay? And that's supposed to be like 6,000 degrees. You get down into the inner core. If there's a hell, the hell is in the inner core. That thing is supposed to be, because of compression, now this is scientists talking, but because of compression and all that stuff, it's supposed to be solid, but it's also over 10,000 degrees. It's supposed to be made up of nickel and iron. And somewhere in that center core, that inner core, is where where hell is. There's a pit in it. You say, well, you know, do you really believe in hell? Well, yeah, I do. And think about this for me, would you? Could you explain to me if the earth, depending on who you ask, is 200 or 300 million years old? And we got spawned off of an explosion at which at one point this earth was just magma, but it's been cool in all these millions of years. Are you telling me that it's still so hot in the middle after 300 million years, if not billion years, whatever it is, that it's still stirring up issues and sending magma by pressure up into volcanoes and stuff on this earth? I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I think God is heating the thing up from the inner core out, because that's where God's wrath burns. In hell, I think that's the pit. It doesn't have a top. It doesn't have a bottom. It's in the middle. It's in the center of the earth, so there is no up, there is no down. But they go down into the sides of the pit. It's all sides. It's just a round area that's all sides. And God's wrath burns there. Our God's a consuming fire. If I descend into hell, thou art there, he says the psalmist, right? So I think that what's keeping the magma boiling, and it keeps spurting up into the, you know, into the bottom of the ocean and all of these volcanoes and stuff, I believe that it's God's wrath that's doing that. I just don't buy that after a billion years of forming and cooling that there's still, you know, magma boiling up out of the center of the earth at this point. I'm sorry. But my coffee cools pretty quickly in the morning if I don't get it down pretty quick, right? And I know it's a lot different from that. But they do say it's, you know, and I don't know if they know this, but 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit in the center of the earth. 10,000 degrees. It's hotter than the sun. I don't know how they know. But to say it's made of nickel and iron, it's solid because of compression. So it's interesting. Anyway, verse 13, and the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of heaven. I never did get you to Revelation 5, did I? Revelation 5, 3, I didn't quite forget completely. Notice 5, 3, no man in heaven, nor in earth, nor under the earth was able to open the book, neither to look thereon. Did you see what it said? No man in heaven, nor in earth, nor under the earth. No man under the earth. There are men under the earth. There are men beneath sea level. Where would they be? Either paradise, Abraham's bosom in the Old Testament, or hell. It says in verse 13, and every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea, and all that are in them, heard I saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever. Look in chapter 9, verse 1, Revelation, real quick. The Revelation chapter 9:1, and the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. Well, the bottomless pit will be in the center of the earth because it has no bottom. It's all sides, right? The sides of the pit, says Ezekiel. And so somebody, there's a some sort of gateway where somebody can open up with a door and let something out of hell. I don't know if the gateway is through the oceans. And so, you know, have the whole Bermuda Triangle stuff going on, or whether it's by another path through the, you know, what or we have as mountains up here, I'm not sure. But somewhere there's a door that an angel one day will open, and what is in hell is going to, at least in part, come out. It's a remarkable thing. And science don't know anything about that. Verse 13 of 1 Samuel 28. Well, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. And he said unto her, what form is he of? Interesting that, well, she didn't say he, she said gods. It's interesting that he said, well, gods are he's. We know angels are he's, right? But just interesting that he jumped to that. What form is he of? And she said, an old man cometh up. And again, now this is the real thing, so but just don't encourage yourself or let somebody, you know, talk you into, you know, maybe there is a way to contact. Don't do that. She made a business of working with familiar spirits and evil spirits, and when she saw this, she was spooked. So don't try this, right? Verse 14, an old man cometh up, and he's covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. And Samuel said to Saul, why hast thou disquieted me? Now, just in case you haven't been introduced or haven't been introduced for a while to what this is that's going on, look in Luke chapter 16 real quick. Luke chapter 16. And I'm telling you, you learn things in the Bible that science doesn't know anything about. Luke chapter 16. And what you need to know is there is a hell. But beyond that, we also know where hell is. Now you start in verse 19. There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen, fared sumptuously every day. There was a certain beggar named Lazarus which was laid at his gate full of sores, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died, was carried by angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried, and in hell he lift up his eyes. So there's a place called Abraham's bosom. By putting just two and two together on some things, Jesus said to the thief on the cross, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. Abraham's bosom was known then as paradise. We'll investigate paradise more in a minute. But Abraham's bosom is down there. And it says that in verse 23, and in hell he lift up his eyes being in torments and seeth Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. So the rich man goes to hell. So hell at this point and Abraham's bosom are within sight of one another. There's a great chasm between them. Notice verse 24, he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water. Cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivest thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted, thou art tormented. But where is that great gulf between? 26, didn't read far enough. Got it. Beside all this, between us and you, there's a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. Now, just so that we're clear, go, if you will, to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2. When Christ died, he fulfills something that David wrote. Acts chapter 2, and notice verse 27. Jesus talking, "Because thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One," notice the capital H, capital O, "to see corruption." Christ went to hell, but didn't see corruption. And so in verse 31, he's seeing this before, David, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in hell, neither his flesh did see corruption. So Christ died on the cross bodily. His body was wrapped, put in a tomb, but his soul descended into hell. He said, "Unto thee I commend my spirit, Father," right? So he commended the spirit to the Father. His soul went to hell. Now, it didn't stay, that's for sure. Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. And go on down to verse 7. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 7. "Unto every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the great gift of Christ. Wherefore he saith, when he ascended up on high," Christ ascended up on high, right? His soul went to hell. He came back up 3 days later and went into his body. His body rose from the dead. And then 50 days later, he ascended up on high. "He led captivity captive and gave gifts to men." Now, what we believe happened there is that Jesus Christ ascended down to hell, preached to the spirits in prison there, and he also, when he came out of hell, he went into Abraham's bosom, where, again, as we saw, Abraham is there, and the rich man, or the Lazarus was there. So, presumably, all the saints of the Old Testament were there. Christ hadn't died for them yet when they died, so they went to a place called Abraham's bosom. It was within view of it was within view of hell. It too was in the center of the earth, although those folks were at peace there. When Christ died, descended to the lower parts of the earth, led captivity captive, and then was risen up on high and set down on the right hand of the Majesty in heaven. Verse 9. Not sure why I'm stumbling over those verses. Verse 9 of Ephesians 4. "Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth, where both Abraham's bosom was and hell still is." Verse 10. "He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fulfill, that he might fill all things." Notice he ascended up and then he descended. He had to descend to go to heaven, to hell, had to ascend to go to heaven. Up and down, simple as that. You ask a kid, heaven's up, hell's down. I don't know how I learned that, because I wasn't taught it as a Southern Baptist kid, that's for sure. But I knew from the beginning that heaven was up and hell was down. It's just weird. But that's what happened. Now, so just to cover a lot of other stuff real quick, look in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Christ said to the thief on the cross, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." And that day Christ descended down into the lower parts of the earth, both to Abraham's bosom and to hell. And so that's where the thief on the cross went. Now things are different because Christ led those people captive. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, Moses, all the saints of old, of the Old Testament, now their sins have been paid for in Calvary, so now Christ could go get them, bring them up, take them to heaven, lead captivity captive, right? 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Now what you do, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, and go on down to verse 6. "Therefore we are always confident, knowing that whilst we," Christians, "are at home in the body, we're absent from the Lord." Okay, it means that you're just not in his presence fully like you will be, right? He lives in your body, and he's with you and all that stuff. "For we walk by faith and not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. So when a Christian dies, he doesn't go to Abraham's bosom. He goes to heaven. He goes directly to heaven. There is no waiting period. There is no need for you to have to wait for anything else to be done because you are complete in Him if you're saved. Okay? So there is no waiting. There is no limbo. There is no purgatory. You go straight to heaven if you're saved, and you go straight to hell if you're lost. It's just really that simple. Now, notice in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, real quick, that Paul is talking about how when they stoned him outside of Lystra, that he gives you this account in verse 1, 12, 1, 2 Corinthians. It is not expedient for me, doubtless to glory, I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I knew a man in Christ above 14 years ago. He's talking about himself. Whether in the body or I cannot tell, or whether out of the body I cannot tell, God knoweth. Such an one caught up to the third heaven. Paul's saying, I was caught up to the third heaven, and I can't to this day figure out whether I was in the body or out of it. But verse 3, I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth, how that he was caught up, notice, into paradise. Okay, now that's what, today Christ said, thou thief on the cross will be with me in paradise. And where Christ, what Christ did from the cross was descend. So paradise was down there. It was Abraham's bosom, right? Nowadays, Abraham's bosom is no longer as such. It is now paradise in heaven. Paul said when he got stoned that he ascended up and went to paradise in heaven for a brief time. Then the Lord sent him back. And so he was kind of suicidal for the rest of his life. In the end, let me give you another paradise verse here. Where did that go to? Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2. Now this is where we know paradise is. Paradise is in heaven. And technically, for us, heaven is New Jerusalem. Revelation 2, verse 7. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. With that, run to 22, Revelation 22. And verse 14. Revelation 22, 14. Now, this is a description starting in verse 21 of the new heaven and the new earth. And then he says in verse 2, 21, 2, I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. New Jerusalem, for those of you that don't know, is a 1,200 mile by 1,200 mile by 1,200 mile city. It's 1,200 miles in three directions, not just square footage, cubic footage. 1,200 miles. That's a big city. It's called New Jerusalem, and one day it descends out of heaven. That's where Jesus Christ has gone to prepare a place for you. In my house are many mansions. Not many rooms. Presumably the mansions have lots of rooms, but he didn't go to prepare no stinking room for you. He went to prepare a mansion for you. And that's in New Jerusalem. I wanted you to see 22:14 because he is still talking about New Jerusalem here. And in verse 14, blessed are they which do his commandments, that they may have a right to the tree of life. Now the tree of life is no interest to you. You have eternal life without a tree of life. But what it said in Revelation 2 was that the tree of life is in paradise. That's the connection. The tree of life's in paradise. Paradise is in New Jerusalem. Okay? It used to be in the center of the earth. Now it's in New Jerusalem. Now, one other little twist. We know that, you know, we've talked a lot recently about our salvation being different than people in other ages, right? And our salvation being different than people in the Great Tribulation, right? So in Revelation chapter 6, um, Revelation chapter 6. Oh, I hope I can find this. There it is. Okay. Revelation chapter 6 lands you late in the tribulation. Okay? And you read here in verse 8, let's just start there, 6:8, I looked and behold a pale horse, and his name was that sat on him was death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto him over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. So you're going to die. I mean, the tribulation is an awful time, but these folks are in the middle of the tribulation. Now watch. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls, not the heads, not the bodies, the souls. I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. Why does it say the souls are under the altar? Under the altar is underground. I think there's a possibility that Abraham's bosom opens back up for tribulation saints. Okay? And I don't have an answer for when they ascend, but there's some other verses on under the earth stuff. So, for what it's worth, you and me, we die and we go to heaven. If you're saved, you go to hell if you are lost. You don't have to go to some medium somewhere, some place to wait like the Old Testament saints did. But that's the doctrine of paradise. Back to verse 15. So Abraham's bosom, that's where Samuel is coming up from. And Samuel said to Saul back in 28:15, why hast thou disquieted me? Now, the Catholic Church teaches that there's a place called purgatory. By the way, it was invented by the Catholic Church, particularly by Augustine, to make money. Because if he could, for instance, lock the souls of your loved ones in some place of temporary suffering where they're going to have to suffer, oh, say, 20 or 30,000 years, you know, until they're purged enough to come out and go to heaven. Well, if you light candles and give money to the church, then you can have them pray your loved ones from, say, 20,000 years down to about 800 or 900 maybe. And it's a moneymaker. But the problem is that in the Bible there's no purgatory. Notice Samuel said unto Saul, why hast thou disquieted me? This is not suffering. This is not purgatory. He's coming up from Abraham's bosom. He was quiet and resting down there. It was a pleasant place, even though it was within sight of hell. And Samuel said to Saul, why hast thou disquieted me? So this is as close to a purgatory or a limbo as you get in the Bible, and that is not what the Catholic Church teaches. Okay? Because Samuel was quiet. He said, why hast thou disquieted me? Why'd you bother me to bring me up? Notice once again, he's coming up. He didn't come out or come over or come down. He went up. And Saul answered, I am sore distressed for the Philistines make war against us, against me. And God has departed from me and answereth me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. Then said Samuel, wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing the Lord has departed from thee and has become thine enemy? Brings up the question, and I don't have the definitive answer. I read it at one juncture and I think, oh, maybe Saul was saved. I read it another time and think, nah. And I kind of go back and forth with it even still, so I really don't know. It says here, the Lord has departed from thee and that he's become thine enemy. I don't know if that means a full-blown enemy of God in the sense that you and I were when we were lost or not. A little bit later, in verse 19, moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. Well, Samuel was saved. He came from Abraham's bosom. Is he saying there that Saul was going to come down and join Samuel in Abraham's bosom along with his sons? I don't know. like I said, in verse 16, you could make that in New Testament parlance. You can make that where God is now Saul's enemy, so Saul must be lost. But if Samuel is just saying, okay, you guys are just going to die and you're going to be in the center of the earth with me, well, Saul's son, Jonathan, as far as I know, was saved. So whether Saul was lost or saved is like a lot of Old Testament saints. You kind of can't tell. Now, we know we're saved, right? Catholics don't know they're saved. They're in the same boat as Saul. You kind of don't know whether they are or aren't sometimes, right? But we are. And so we can know, but we're not accustomed to folks to not being able to tell, but they're just folks in the Old Testament, you just really can't tell whether they are or aren't. Verse 17, and the Lord hath done to him, talking about David, the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me, for the Lord hath rent the kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David. That's the him that he's talking about. Because thou obeyedst not the voice of the Lord, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek, therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. Now there is also another reason for it. Look, if you will, in 1 Chronicles chapter 10. 1 Chronicles chapter 10. And go on down to verse 13. Saul died for his transgression which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that hath a familiar spirit to inquire of it. So that's where the Lord drew the line. Back to verse 19. We'll have to close here in just a sec. Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. I personally think it's just promising him death, and whether he went to heaven, to hell, or to Abraham's bosom, I don't know. Shalt thou and thy sons be with me. The Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Then Saul fell straightway all along the earth, and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength in him, and he had eaten no bread at all that day, or the day, or all the night. And the woman came unto Saul and saw that he was sore troubled, and said unto him, behold, thine handmaid hath obeyed thy voice. I put my life in my hand and have hearkened unto thy words, and which thou spakest unto me. Now therefore I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thine handmaid. Let me set a morsel of bread before thee and eat, that thou mayest have strength when thou goest in the way. But he refused and said, I will not eat. But his servants together with the woman compelled him, and he hearkened unto their voice. And so he arose from the earth and sat upon the bed. So we're coming up close to the end of Saul. We'll go more into it next time. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir?